Yes, sir. What's your name, sir?
Edward Maul.
Okay, sir. The Honorable Mr. Michael Carson will conduct your hearing at this time. He will be the lead at this time, so just hold on, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Could you please state your name and your ABC number for us for the record?
Yeah, you guys are, I got that, but you're very muffled. But anyway, Edward John Maul, 11-24-67.
Okay,
is
this any better? Just a moment?
Yeah, somewhat. Go ahead. I got a problem. I'll let you know.
Okay, is there a volume adjustment that you have on your end on the phone, sir?
Okay, I didn't hear one word of that.
Is there a volume adjustment that you have on your phone on your end?
Is there a problem with the phone? Okay. Like you want to do it over speaker? Because it's just a bit mumble. Okay. You got it?
Yeah, we're here on our end. Can you hear me okay, sir?
I can now, yeah.
Okay, how's that, Mr. Ball?
Can you hear you? Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay, so you're here before the Arizona Board of Executive Committee. I am going to introduce you to the board members that are going to be conducting your hearing today. You have the Honorable Luis Quinones, the Honorable David Hill, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chair, the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse, and sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your lead on your hand this morning.
Honorable Mr. Johnson, would you have him state his number again for us?
Okay. Mr. Martin, could you please state your board name and your ADC number for us again, please?
Now, my ADC number is 297-290.
Thank you.
Okay, so you are appearing before this board for an absolute discharge or a remedy to your next consecutive sentence. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And according to some information that we have, you were actually eligible last year for parole. However, because of the glitch in the aim, it didn't show. So you were not given a parole hearing last year. Is that right? This is your actual first parole hearing.
This is my first parole hearing. You said I was eligible last year?
Yes.
Okay. But I wasn't seen last year for some reason?
Yes.
Okay. And why was that?
Because of the glitch that they had with the aims and that your name didn't come up. So if you are granted parole to your next consecutive sentence, then we would make it retroactive back 1 year.
Okay, I didn't quite catch that, but it's okay. We got to have a hearing here, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay, so you're currently serving two 7-year sentence for molestation, attempted molestation of a child. And those sentences are running consecutively. You are currently on your first 7-year sentence. That sentence began on September 10th, 2012. You became parole eligible on March 11th, 2016. Is that about right, sir?
Mr. Yeah, I wasn't aware of the eligibility back then, but yeah, that's my belief.
Okay.
Of what's going on here today.
Okay. According to the institutional progress report that we have, sir, states that if you were released, that you would stay with friends and family, that would let you be released to their address, although there's no address listed on here. You stated that you had enough money saved to get started in the housing and food and a car. Also, you also have a wife, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. You have attended some programming since you've been in there, which looks like in 2018, these classes are done. You had cognitive thinking, cultural diversity, in a construction class, and then in 2015 you had a functional literacy class. Is that right?
Yeah. While there was thinking for a change, cultural diversity, the construction class, now I'm in electrical.
Okay. And it also says in the comments that in 2015 you had a room violation that was informally resolved, and then in November of 16 you had a disrespect that was informally resolved and finalized. It looks like you've only had those two discipline infractions since you've been incarcerated. What happened on those infractions, sir?
Well, I had first got here and I didn't have my shirt tucked in, and I was walking to chow, and a CO was trying to get my attention, but it's very windy up here, so I couldn't hear him, so he came running out and grabbed my ID and wrote me up for not tucking my shirt in. And then the other one was being woken up at, like, I forget, 2 in the morning or something from a CO, and because they couldn't see my face. So there was some disrespect there on my part, but I believe if I was awake and in my right mind, that wouldn't happen. But the guy that was reviewing the ticket saw it my way, and he just dismissed it. But I was in the wrong.
All right. So you currently in custody. Looks like there were several incidents that occurred back in 1985, 1986 that involved you, that actually involved some burglaries, breaking into, going over to a fence yard and removing some goods, and then there were also some sexual assaults where you went through a window and sometimes you sexually assaulted or got involved with minor children that were asleep in the bed. They were waking up by you sometimes. It appears that when they woke up and screamed that you fell out of the window, and sometimes you, at least one time you did try to sexually penetrate one of the females. You were put on probation, sir, and as a result of your probation, there was a number of years, almost seems like about 20 years, that you were on probation, and as a result of being on probation, you had several violations. Although it did say that you worked, you had a job, you got a car, but you continued to have problems while you were on probation, and subsequently, your probation was violated, and then you were sentenced to the 2 7-year sentence to be served consecutively. Is that about right?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say. I mean, I had my car. I don't know. I just believe that if I don't know. It was a long time to be. I was on probation for 27 years, and each violation came every 8 years. You know, and I wouldn't say I was a total screw up. However, you know, I'm here. I didn't do it to the letter. There's a lot of circumstances around that, but I mean, I wrote you out kind of a little. I wrote a lot of notes here to speak on today, but yeah, what you're saying is correct.
Okay, well, Mr. Muller, why don't you tell us in your own words at this time, going back to the time that you were actually involved in the burglaries and the sexual assaults, and the long extended period of time that you were on probation, what was actually going on with you, sir, during that period of time?
Well, I've told this story so many times, and, you know, over time, just by mentioning my age at the time, which I was 16 at the time, you know, it's really just, it's a big minimization and justification, you know, but the fact is that's how old I was. What I did was I poked into the homes of some of my neighbors. I assaulted young girls, two of which I knew, two of which I didn't. And I have no excuse. I'm fifth year. You know, since this sentence, the beginning of this sentence, you know, I felt it was unfair, you know, and I would tell you that I was 16 and a fifth year old now, and I was on probation for 27 years, and, you know, I would talk about the hardships of probation, you know, like the plethysmographs and the polygraphs and the counseling and the surveillance and the, you know, getting notified on that I'm living in the neighborhood and all those hardships, you know. That's the way I felt in the beginning. You know, I felt that somehow all those years on probation should have counted for something. I don't really feel that right now. And I'll get to that. But, you know, when sentenced in 1987, you know, the judge at that time defended me. You know, obviously there was people there that wanted me to get prison time and all this. And he actually, you know, defended me and was talking of how I was a product of my environment, how I grew up in that neighborhood, how everybody, and whatever I did, everybody needed to take some responsibility for, because that's what made me up. Basically, later, I found out that the judge didn't know what to do and had called a therapist at the time and asked him his opinion. And basically the therapist was like, you know, everybody's a product of their own environment. You know, they have these learned behaviors from their upbringings, and it shapes their thinking and what have you. So that's what he went by. And at that time, he sentenced me to a year and two lifetimes. If I was an older man back then, I wouldn't have got that. And, you know, to be honest, in the beginning, and it's caused me a lot of problems over time, I honed in on that as far as it being other people's fault, you know. I mean, because I didn't want to be who I was. I didn't want to do those things, but I did them. And I, you know, wanted to place blame on something else other than myself. And, you know, when I got into counseling back then, that was basically the premise, you know, family of origin, mistaken beliefs, thinking errors. In other words, you know, what you believe, you learned, and what you think, you believe, and ultimately, you're going to do what you think. So, like I said, I never liked where I was. I placed blame on other things. It caused me a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, led to many other defects of character in my life. But it was still serving some purpose. I do agree with the judge back then and counseling, but I only agree with it as it pertains to the 16-year-old me. You know, and not, you know, the 30 or 40 or 50-year-old me. You know, I believe at that time I was still in high school, and I was a kid, you know. This didn't come to me just being in here. This came over a long period of time. And, a lot of life-changing experiences that I've had. In counseling, you know, I learned a lot, and those things have stuck with me. There's a lot of tools they teach in there. You know, like to this day, you know, I look at a woman for no more than 2 seconds. They called it the 2-second rule, you know.
So Mr. Miller,
the offense, what's that, sir?
Did you say you had something you want to read to us? Is that what you're reading to us at this time?
Yeah, I have notes here, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing what I wrote.
Right.
And I know you guys are pressed for time. You probably have other people, but I'll try to make it as quick as I can. You know, I've learned the offense cycle. I could tell you where I'm at any time. You know, victim posture, isolation, minimizing, whatever. You know, all my triggers and red flags. You know, maybe just all the symptoms that people of sexual abuse go through. I was told at one point on probation that I could teach the class, you know, I mean, I had a lot of head knowledge, but real change in my life happened between sentencing then and sitting here now, just through my life experience. There's no way I'm the same at 50 with everything I went through that I was when I was 16 years old. You know, there's things you can't learn through a workbook. You know, things that change the heart, you know, that 180-degree turn, that changing of the mind, you know. These are the things that, in my mind, they can cause people to lose a lifelong behavior in a blink of an eye, you know, much like a person that throws his cigarettes away after watching a loved one die of cancer, you know, that quick. It's one thing to have knowledge taught about what victims go through, but it's another to live and see it in people that you care about. You know, my wife, you know, she suffered from alcoholism and constant starting over, halfway houses, depression, anger, panic attacks. You know, she needs sleeping pills at night to go to sleep. You know, all the promiscuity in her life. And she suffered molestation, you know, from her mother's boyfriends, and to see that, you know, it's much different than a book, you know. And I've had in my past drug and alcohol addiction. I was in the AA program for a number of years, and, you know, just dealing with my own victimization from when I was molested as a kid, you know, from 7 to 9 years old, it changes you. It changes your thinking. And, you know, as a dad today, you know, I look at my daughter and I see a perfect person. You know, she's smart. You know, she's funny. She's kind and generous and all those things. I love her. I'm so very proud. And, you know, and I can't believe that I would hurt somebody else's pride and joy, you know, at this time, at age 50. You know, she's caused me to see other people in that life, you know. On a sexual standpoint, you know, I've dealt with these things that have caused me to victimize others, at least in that sense, sexually, for a very long time, you know. Like I say, I don't think anybody can say they're the same as when they were. If you thought about when you were 16 yourself, can you say that you think the same way? You
know? That's true. Mr. Morrow.
Yes, sir.
So what has changed since you've been incarcerated this time? Because, sir, just looking at the information that we have that's here, in 1987, so you made a plea agreement to 26 counts, which included burglary, sexual assault, attempted molestation of a child, dangerous crimes against children. And for those crimes, you counts two. You see 5 years probation, counts 9 and count 26, you got 5 years probation, counts and 4 years probation for count 20, and then you're given a lifetime probation, counts 1 and counts 6, and then it looks like you only had to do a year in jail for all the other counts, and then the rest of them are all dismissed. So it looks like that you got a very, very, very lenient sentence. At the time that you, even though you may have been 16, your sentence was very lenient, that you only did 1 year in jail, and you had lifetime probation on those other two. And then while you were out on that lifetime probation, you did work. It doesn't say you totally never did anything, but you did work. But you continually violated your probation numerous times until the judge finally sentenced you to 7 years each on those two counts that you had lifetime probation on. So what has changed that is going to make you comply to the rules of what you need to comply with to not be in trouble, sir?
Well, in prison, I've lived my life out there. You know, I had my own business, I had a home, I had a family, I had, you know, there's guys in here that have been here forever, you know, and it stops growing, you know. Arrested development is real. And anyway, the hardest thing that's been in here for me is obviously to be away from my family and loved ones, and also to deal with, you know, some of the guys in here, you know, and it's made me see what I definitely don't want. But the thing is through my life, I've always relied on other people. I've always needed people. I've always had family. I've always had, having those things taken away, you know, I had a lot of anger and resentment, and I realized that, you know, I can't change anybody's heart. I can't make them care about me. I can't make them love me. You know, I was in the same home group in AA for 7 years, and when I haven't had one letter from any of those guys, and so it's caused me to self-soothe on my own without pleasures or any escapes from the outside. Okay. You know, I've had to rely on myself. The death of my father since I've been in here,
Mr. Bob,
has caused me a lot of thought and reflection.
Mr. Ball. What I'd like to know is back in 85, 86, when you went into these homes and sexually abused, sexually assaulted these young females, in which you say you knew most of them because it was in your neighborhood, what was going through your mind? What caused you to do that? And to continually do it?
Well, you know, it was sex and it was deviant. You know, it was a deviancy. If you ask counseling, the only reasons you offend is from attention, affection, power, and control, and revenge. You know, and power and control. Like I said, I was molested at 7 years old. I was acting out sexually by 8 or 9. You know, so it was a deviancy. It was, I don't know what else to tell you. It was, you know.
Today
I can't fathom what I did. So, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not the same.
So,
and you hear that all the time, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, but the truth is, go ahead.
So you were on probation for 20 years. So while you were
It was 27 years.
Okay, 27 years you were on probation before you finally got violated and sent to prison for these charges. So while you were on probation, you did take some sex classes, is that right?
I was on counseling the entire time I was on probation.
And so what was your triggers to make you go do that? Did you get that figured out?
My triggers?
Yes, sir.
Really, they didn't go through triggers for the actual offense. What they mainly concentrated on was, what would your triggers be for future offenses, you know? I mean, can you recognize your triggers?
Okay.
You know, and, you know, my triggers for most anything and for that are the same, you know? They're depression. You know, their anger from some unresolved issue, their pornography. Well, the first two, they're mainly red flags. The triggers themselves, you know, pornography, drugs can be a trigger, alcohol can be a trigger.
Okay. So I understood the boy.
Financial problems can be a trigger, you know. Stress can be a trigger, you know.
Okay, I understood the boy. Has any additional questions for you, sir? Ms. Quinton. Ms. Rittenhouse, I'm sorry.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ball, you were on probation for a long period of time, and you've talked about how you've changed as you matured, and now that you're older, you think differently. However, I'm looking at the actual time that you were violated and actually throughout your probation, there were numerous probation violations that occurred all along, and specifically in 2014, which is only not even 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, in December of 2014, You were violated again. You admitted to having contact with the victim, not following your weekly schedule, and more importantly, to something you just said, you admitted to using illegal drugs and alcohol multiple times, and yet you just told us drugs and alcohol are one of your triggers for offending. So how can you explain that?
Well, you know, you're clean until you relapse. You know, I wasn't in contact with my victims of sexual abuse. I was in contact with my wife. And I had just spent 9 months in jail from an altercation with my wife. You know, I had many times on probation with long stints of sobriety. Before this last time, I was violated. My wife had a stroke. She had a blood clot in her brain. And I had 4 years of sobriety at that time, and I had lost it. And I fell. You know, so, there's no excuse. I did what I did. But what I said before, on a sexual standpoint, creating more victims, I have not. I still have problems, and I'm going to deal with problems when I leave here, you know.
So, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
All right. Mr. Joe.
Hey, ma'am, since you brought up the violation,
yes.
I do have the victim you speak of that I was in contact with. I have the letter that she wrote the judge before that sentencing. You know, it might... Well, I don't even want to read it. I'm just saying. On a sexual standpoint, I am no longer the man that I was when I was 16. I've gone through a lot. And, you know, I did get a lenient sentence at the time. However, you know, when you have kids of your own and they're getting teased and picked on because their parents got notified of their father moving into the neighborhood, you know, when you can't go to, you can't go to the kids' play, or you can't, the family has suffered. There's been hardship, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't, I mean, it should have been just towards me, but I haven't been out there partying and jumping for joy for 27 years. You know, it has been difficult. But I'm not saying I'm owed anything.
Mr. Moore, we have some other board members that have some questions for you. Mr. Neal.
Yes, sir. Pardon me, I'm going to put my microphone on. Yesterday we had trouble with the echo. So one of the questions that keeps popping up with me when you tell us about what happened with these offenses, all the dates I can find and all the paperwork I have indicate that you were 18 when you committed these crimes, not 15. And you keep
referring to the time of the crimes. I was 15 and 17 at the time of the crimes, arrested at 18, convicted at 19.
The dates of the crimes that are listed in your report indicate you were 18 when you committed. If they were off by a few months, you might have been 17, but not 50. Okay. Now, another question I have, you keep referring back to when you were molested, and that's an excuse for your behavior. But from everything I've read, heard, and actually I know several people that were severely sexually abused when they were in that same age range, they all chose not to be molesters or do that stuff. So what made you make the choice to become a sexual predator, sir?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'll tell you this. I would say if there was a poll taken, or if there was a census taken, I'd say more sex offenders have been molested than healthy people. You know,
explain that to me. You say that more sex offenders have been molested than sex offenders that haven't been molested. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm would say as a population, I would say the percentage is higher with sex offenders having had sexual abuse in their past than not. But I'm not blaming that. I'm saying if you believe that counseling works and you sentence people to counseling, the entire premise of that counseling is that the belief system of that offender was affected by what has happened to them in their life. Now, if I was molested at a young age, my belief might be, well, it's okay, you know, sex feels good no matter what. You know, my body betrayal says it feels good. Sex can be done with an adult as a child if you're molested. These are the beliefs, mistaken beliefs, that you get that I'm taught from counseling. I was told this by my counselors. Here's how you got that belief. Now you can change that belief.
Exactly. That's
all
I'm asking. What caused you to change that belief? Because, I mean, I think if it's a population, or a total of the population of these issues, actually, there are a hugely larger number of people that have been molested than don't molest children. When the other way around. So, okay, but let's move beyond that. I don't have any more questions at this time.
Mr. Cajales.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Moore, can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is a variation of something that my colleagues have already mentioned, but there's a passage from a 2010 probation report from an officer, Chladlinsky. And the passage is, the behaviors that the defendant demonstrated over the last year indicate that the defendant has not internalized the lessons conveyed over 20 years of sex offender treatment, or at a minimum, they indicate that the individual that still struggles with compulsion and desires that continue to create additional victims and or may threaten public safety. Now, this is the 42-year-old you, not the 16, 17, 18-year-old you. So my question is, and I recognize we've gone there, but what has happened in the last 8 years since then that has changed when you were already, at that point, had received 20 years of sex offender treatment? What has changed in you now?
You know, if they do what is called a frost, you know, and I've had so many of them done, and if you look at the report from him a year prior, it would be totally different. You're just honing in on that one, and that was after my wife had a stroke, and I had relapsed on drugs, and I had done all these things that I was trying to do to cover it up because I didn't want to lose my family. So, what's different between now and then? I've lost my family. I've lost my freedom. I'm tired. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I don't quite know what to say. You know, I'm just saying there's ups and downs on probation. You know, that same probation officer, you know, when I went in to petition the court to be removed from probation when I was doing very well at the time, didn't oppose it at the time, and, you know, things change, you know, I mean, you're doing good until you're not doing good, you know, that's why there's a parole board, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir, I appreciate your response. I have one last question, and I'm certainly not trying to tear off scabs. You made reference to being molested as a child. Were you molested by only one individual?
By who?
Were you molested by only one individual?
You mumbled. I'm saying, what I thought I heard was...
Was there only one person who molested you?
An older friend of my brother's. I was 7, he was 17 at the time, and it went on for a couple of years.
And did you ever think to bring charges against this individual? Not to make not to make that your fault, that's not where I'm going with it, but were you able to bring charges against this individual?
At the time, okay, for years, I felt very weird about it, and at the time, he told me I would get in trouble if I brought it up, and I had just forgotten, you know, I didn't forget it, but I just, you know, and he molested my niece as well, and she never, I don't know what he told her, I don't know, I just, it was never brought up, and he was out of my life after junior high. You know, I have in the past thought of, you know, I even made mention to my niece, you know, that if she wanted to, we could get together and locate him and get some power back, you know, and file some charges, but she didn't think it would do any good. So, no, not at the time, definitely. And later, you know, we're talking a young man, you know, 20 or so, who probably, you know, I felt at the time I didn't want this ever to be. I mean, I did bring it up in counseling, and it was an issue in counseling over those years. He never talked to me about bringing up charges. I just felt that, you know, my life at the time is just what's important right now, not somebody else's. I don't know what I felt.
It's my last question, and that is, when you were being victimized, did you think it was okay at the time? Did you grow up believing that was okay?
No, I didn't. I felt weird, you know, thinking back about it. You know, I was walking up the alley, and all of a sudden he comes out of the backyard with a bag of trash, you know. And, you know, thinking back, I know that he saw me and he saw me coming and he planned this. And he had asked if I wanted to go swimming. It was summer, and then, of course, I didn't have any swim trunks. And, of course, you know, we're in our underwear. And, of course, you know, I felt very strange when he was touching me and whatnot. And he had a bedroom that was, like, converted from the garage. So it was separate from his house, and I came out of there. And then his mom came out, and his mom looked at him funny. What are you doing with this little boy? And he said, oh, this is Brian's little brother. We're just going swimming. But thinking back, she had a strange look on her face, like she knew this was going on, and she knew this may have happened before with other people. And, you know, again,
okay.
No, I didn't think it was normal.
I'm going to give this a close. I'm certainly not trying to traumatize you with the past. I'm just trying to get some understanding of where you're at. Your history and everything that has led to the offense. So I'll just stop right there, Mr. Moore, but thank you for being candid with the board. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Moore, we also have a supporter here, Mr. Brent Byler. So do you want to, I'm going to have him speak at this time. If you want to come up to the podium, sir, and just state your name and then present whatever information you'd like to present to the board, please.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for coming.
Out of respect for time, I prepared a statement, and there's also a letter from Edward's mother.
Okay.
Dear board members, I have known Ed Ball for 35 years. We met in high school. We were at each other's weddings. We have remained close friends until today. We spent considerable time with one another and talked in depth about personal, family, career, and faith matters over the years. I believe I know him well, and I continue to visit him in prison. As you consider whether to move Ed to his next sentence, I wanted to pass along these observations for your consideration. The first is, Ed is not reoffended in the area that he's serving time in for nearly 30 years. He spent 27 years in society between ages roughly between 19 and 47 without harming or committing a sex crime against a minor. There may be other areas that he's failed in, but I think it's important to note that this particular area has not been an issue for him, both in private conversations and in terms of anyone who's caught him doing anything, or in terms of another victim reporting it. I'm not a psychologist, but I see no signs or deviant inclinations toward minors. I have 3 children of my own, and I sought permission from this PO for him to see them at family gatherings. I would never do this. I love my children. I would never do this unless I had any inkling there was an issue in that regard, nor would my wife. Second, Ed strongly desires to help others when he gets out. This may sound like a convenient claim on the heels of a parole hearing, but I can attest that in dozens of private conversations since his return 3 years ago, Ed has expressed a strong desire to help others when he gets out, whether through AA programs, helping provide housing or jobs to former inmates transitioning back to society. He has said that more important than financial or career success, that he wants to be, that he wants this to be the thrust of the rest of his life, helping others. Ed is motivated in preparing for his initial release. He has a wife and his daughter, age 10. He desires to support them in every respect when he gets out. He has not gotten into trouble while incarcerated. He has taken classes and is very selective about the friends that he chooses to spend time with in prison to ensure that he remains focused. Finally, he has matured. He has grown to be very self-aware. I've seen that from high school forward. He has an even perspective on the role his abuse in childhood has impacted him. In our talks, he takes responsibility for those choices he has made. He is now clear on what he wants and what he does not want in life. I believe with everything in me that Ed is no longer a danger to others. I hope this assists you in arriving at a fair decision. This is a statement from his mother. To whom may concern, my name is Gene Maul. I'm writing in regard to my son, Edward Maul, who is before you for consideration. My husband, Don, and I raised Ed to be law-abiding. We were accustomed to make the choices he made as a 16-year-old student at St. Mary's High School in Phoenix is beyond my comprehension. He had no juvenile record of any kind prior to the sentencing, and he is not reoffended and is now 50 years old. It's going to be noticed to be a caring and compassionate man who is willing to help those less fortunate than him, to the point of inviting homeless people to Thanksgiving dinner at his home, something most of us would not consider doing. Since his sentencing in 1988, he has always held a job and initially started his own business. However, Edwin seemed to lose all hope in 2009 when his then 32-year-old suffered a stroke that left her partially paralyzed. He became his her primary caregiver. You have before you a caring human who has had approximately 30 years to assess his past criminal behavior, who acknowledges and takes responsibility for his actions. He is sorry for the other part of the witness, as well as his friends, although he still has difficulty forgiving himself for their suffering. I hope and pray that you see a great chance to enter society as a middle-aged man who has learned his lesson. Thank you for your consideration in this letter. Yours truly, Gene Maul.
Thank you, sir. There's a very lively question, sir. Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, Mr. Maul, we're coming up on the conclusion of your hearing, sir. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the board without repeating yourself?
Other than, I my father died in here, and I'm a believer. I'm not a religious person, but I believe in Jesus Christ. And before I got here, my God was always punishing. And through my father's death and worrying about his afterlife, I've sought quite a bit and come to the conclusion that there is total grace and that, for me to be forgiven, I need to forgive others, and it has to be total forgiveness. So my victimizer, I forgive. And I only ask that he has a repentant heart and that he does a 180, you know, and that I believe I've done that despite the troubles that I've had. And I would point out that, you know, the violations occurred over 27 years, and I struggled. And the main focus of my life was the sexual behaviors and trying to change my thinking. I think I have. I do have troubles in other areas, but on the standpoint of creating a victim, you know, I've been victimizing myself. You know, so I thank you for your time today. That's all I have.
Okay, sir, the board is about to go into discussion. While we're in discussion, I'm going to ask you to remain on the line so that you can hear the conversation taking place between the board. During the time that we're in discussion, sir, we will make a determination whether to grant or deny you parole to your next consecutive sentence or an absolute discharge. So stay on the phone, sir. I will remain silent. The board is now into discussion. We had an opportunity to review the paperwork and information that we actually have. And I'm going to say, based off the paperwork and information that we have, along with the opportunity to hear the support from have a conversation with Mr. Maher, I think that Mr. Maher received a very, very lenient sentence at the time that he was convicted at age 19 years old. He sexually assaulted, abused several young females. It started out just breaking going into somebody's yard, opening up the window, taking some beer, and then in progress to where he was peeking at the window, wanting to open windows and going in and accessory assaulting these victims. One of the victims was 16 years old, and she had a broken window. While he was there, and then one of the was 11 years old, one of the 11 years old, and at least one of the victims, he did try to sexually penetrate them, but was unable to. But he did, when he would hear him scream, he would run really loud. Again, but he was placed on probation for 27 years and had an opportunity to change his life around and conform. And in talking to him, he says that his red flag is anger and depression. Those are the red flags. And then his triggers are pornography, drugs, and alcohol. And, you know, just listening to him now, you know, he is depressed. He does have anger because he says he's lost his family. He lost his freedom as a result of being reincarcerated back out. And I think that you know, those flags are there. I think that Mr. Maher would be a threat and a danger to the community if released back out, or whenever he's released back out under the present circumstances that we have. I do understand that he was sexually molested as a child. However, he inflicted, you know, great pain on these victims. And I just am not in favor of granting him parole to his next consecutive sentence. I think he's had plenty of time to conform, and he just hasn't conformed. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I agree with you. Mr. Maher was given an extremely lenient sentence and was placed on lifetime probation for a reason. And yet, with this violation, when these sentences are served, I believe his lifetime probation will be ended.
Yeah.
So he will not be on probation again, and that bothers me greatly. So I think he should serve every bit of this sentence that he received.
Mr. Dell.
I agree with both of my colleagues to this point. I don't know, but in explanation of things, I keep hearing the excuses, kind of the same way. The age that he keeps putting out there is about 30 2 to 3 years younger than the crime that he was actually charging him with. Of course, most of them being dismissed or anything. But the 4 times he'd been out there violating the right to live, save my sentences, to do these 2 7-year sentences, is that could understand, you know, how he could think that he would get a fifth chance. Not a second chance, or even a third chance, but a fifth chance. And I just don't see the personal growth because of the continued violations or everything. And one of the problems was domestic violence. So I don't see him as good at this time. I worry that he will be back out in society. So I'm not in favor of probably less than 70 cents or after this
president. Okay. Do you have any comments, Mr. Canales?
Yes, I'll keep it short. I think you guys have covered quite a bit of information, and you certainly heard the questions that I asked. I just don't believe we can safely return him back to the community. We have some tough decisions to make on behalf of the people of Arizona. Thank you.
I would agree also, and just for the record, we do have a letter dated May 7th, 2018 from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office opposing his being paroled to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge.
Okay, well, based on the information that we have today, I am going to make a motion to deny Mr. Maugh parole to his next consecutive sentence or a absolute discharge.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, second by Ms. Rittenhouse, agreed by Mr. Quinones, agreed by Mr. Neal, and agreed by Dr. Wright. I am going to lose instance current in 85, 86. I'm going to also ask for a 1 year setup. The reasons for denial is that I'm going to, it's a serious and violent offense, serious and deep offenses. These victims have definitely trauma to the victims. I'm going to mark age of the victims since they were all minors. I'm also going to mark multiple victims. I'm also going to mark that he did violate his previous probation or parole. I'm going to say that he had a history of continued substance abuse based on his statement that he was doing drugs and alcohol. I'm also going to mark him as a repeat offender since he did continue to commit these crimes in 85 and 86 that were known as victims. Also going to mark, I'm going to mark court no release plan. I'm not going to mark that he didn't have any family or community support, although he did have a friend, and he also had a letter here from his mother. Those are going to be my reasons for it. Denial, if the board has anything else they'd like to add or an agreement. Okay. Mr. Moore?
Yes.
So the board is voting to deny you an absolute discharge or parole to your next consecutive sentence. You will be eligible to come back before this board. We ask for a 1 year set off to come back to before this board in 1 year. The Department of Corrections will determine when you're eligible to come back before this board, notify us and certify you, then you will have an opportunity to come back before this board in about 8 years. So that is going to conclude your hearing at this time, Mr. Moe. I do want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity for appearing before the board. Thank you. That's going to conclude your hearing.
Thanks.